Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Nerdist Podcast.
Well, my voice got a lot higher. Hey, other voice, what Nerdist Podcast number is this?
Why are you talking to yourself right now?
I'm so clever.
This is so weird. Why are you talking to yourself?
Oh, this is both. I'm Tuvian podcasting.
What number is it? I don't know what number.
It's 489.
489? Wow!
Good read. we had an amazing At Midnight show last night, which is that,
Will Ferrell,
a.k.a. Chad Softwick, came on to promote our spinoff show At Midday. So you can see clips of that on Comedy Central YouTube site or Nerdist.com or on Hulu, and you can actually follow Chad Softwick at Softwick on the Twitter. Did I say that Will's character was Chad Softwick? Anyway, that was his character, and it was amazing. He had the hair drapes and a fantastic sweater, and the show was really fun. It was Rob Hubel and Michaela Watkins and Doug Benson. So At Midnight. And then we're on Monday through Thursday after Colbert. Watch other At Midnight shows. Next week, you know who's on next week, Chloe?
No, who's on next week?
Next week on one of the shows is Jonah Ray, Matt Myra, and Will Wheaton on one panel.
Oh, wow, are you serious?
Yeah.
That's going to be really fun.
I know it is. See, that's the kind of sincere read I was hoping for the first time.
I have a question about Chad Softwick.
May not have an answer. Yeah, what is your question?
Well, all right, cranky pants.
Pants are not cranky.
So, is Chad Softwick what you would have become had you not stopped drinking?
I was Peter Hardwick, a.k.a. Chad Softwick.
Parallel universe you.
I really was. And in Terminator 3, I was very Softwick. I would like to thank Squarespace for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. This is an all-in-one platform that's going to make it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, online store. So please, please, if this is something that interests you, if you want to create an online presence in such a way that is beyond microblogging and status updates, then use Squarespace. Use the offer code NERDIST3. You're going to get 10% off after a free trial. I mean, it is an incredible platform with fantastic customer support. So at any level of coding that you are, you're going to be able to build a website on Squarespace. And there's no credit card to sign up. You can start building your website immediately. Then when you actually do decide to use Squarespace, again, use the offer code NERDIST3. You're going to get 10% off. And you're also going to support this Nerdist Podcast. It just starts at $8 a month. Plans are $8 a month to begin with. They go up from there. This includes a free domain if you sign up for a year. And then every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, because a lot of times there's a disparity between desktop and mobile, and you know, even we on Nerdist had a really kind of a crappy mobile version of the site for a long time, and then we're fixing that now. Squarespace makes that completely easy. So again, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code NERDIST3, 10% off after a free trial. This episode of the podcast is a three-peat of Neil deGrasse Tyson. Your tattoo buddy, Chloe.
He didn't tattoo me. That would have been really hardcore if he just straight up tattooed me.
No, he did not tattoo you, but
he moonlights as a
He set the table. Moonlight!
Yeah,
astrophysicist!
I know.
Technically, that's sunlight, Chloe. Mm-hmm. It's just reflecting off the moon.
Oh,
so basically,
stop
as an astrophysicist,
on me.
He's sunlighting.
Please. God.
Neil's back on because the television event, Cosmos, is coming to Fox March 9th, Sunday night, and then Monday, It airs again on the National Geographic Channel Monday night. So you can follow Neil Tyson on Twitter, and you should listen to Neil deGrasse Tyson because he's one of the smartest people.
And he's going to save us all when an asteroid's going to hit the Earth.
What's he going to do? Fly up? You know, Neil would actually fly up. Neil is like science's version of Chuck Norris.
Can you imagine if that was a movie?
Neil flew up on a pterosaur and punched the asteroid and saved the Earth.
I would watch that movie so many times.
I would too. All right, let's go make that movie.
Okay.
Right now, it's the Nerds Podcast number 49 with Neil deGrasse Tyson. I love him so much.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We put you at the foot of the table.
Yeah, no, this is my favorite. Nice to see you.
Oh.
So we
pretty much covered it.
In the 1960s, they would shave the hippie head and put you in the Marines.
I got drafted.
Yeah, nice little jar. You got a jar head going.
He did like cry when they were doing it to him, just like one of those movies.
It took so many months to grow this.
Hey, man.
Yeah, no, I don't know what happened. I just decided to go for a more military cut lately.
That's what that is. That's...
Did you really? Like, that was the thing you decided?
I didn't say I want a military cut. I just said,
high and tight.
I'll tell you. You know what? I'll tell you exactly where it came from. I saw a picture of David Beckham.
Yeah,
and his hair—it was just like super shaved on the sides, and I'm like, I like that.
No, but you need his body, I think, if you're going to pull that one off.
Oh man, yeah but
out the gate slam.
Sean, you got Tyson.
Damn it. Well, the guy who cuts my hair can't make that happen. He can't actually chisel my body as well. So the best I can do is...
We have all kinds of surgeries now, Chris.
Ear to the top of the head, Beckham.
Yeah.
There was a story this morning in the at midnight...
Are we on?
Morning
right
package.
Yeah, this
We're
is
on
it.
Right now.
We're on
Ears
right
up,
now.
David Beckham. Chin down, Victoria Beckham.
Yeah, that's how I like to do.
But there was an article this morning about in New York, there's a lot of clients in Williamsburg who are going to this cosmetic surgeon to have a beard... filled in.
That
like
may...
to have hair filled in on there.
I guess I don't know. I guess that's all right if you want a beard.
Well, because the hipster beard craze apparently is.
Did you ever have like a big thick beard?
No. No, I've only ever had this mustache and my upper lip has never been shaved in my entire life.
No, why is that?
Came out.
Cuz it's just what it is. I mean, I I get criticized for it being a 70s porn stash, right?
It does go out a little far.
It's a little thick on the edges there. And if you look at any 70s porn movies, the guy's got thick mustaches. And so I came of age in the 70s. I
guess. Sure.
I'm that old.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just left over from then. But I'm okay with that. I don't have issues. You know?
That's good. You know what? I think it's good because it's very hard to pull off a really excellent mustache. It's hard to do that. I can't do it. You've had a mustache before.
I have a mustache sometimes, but I have what I call the Weird Al gap, where it just doesn't connect in the middle. It just doesn't have the hair right.
Fultrum.
Here. Yeah, yeah.
You've got a good beard, Matt Myra.
Thank you.
Yeah. My beard's not good.
Otherwise, it would just
can see that it's sculpted.
It would go to here.
Yeah.
And then
I would come up and meet your eyebrows.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you would be a monkey.
I would be a circus boy in Mexico.
A circus monkey. Yes.
See the wolf boy. Yeah. It's Matt Mira.
Now, is it really that much of a jump between cosmology and cosmetology?
Yes.
Okay. Good. I was just making sure. That's what I thought. We all thought.
Just to clarify. Yeah.
Thank you for coming. This is a three-peat. This is the third.
Is it my third time?
This is the third instance of NDT on the Nerdist podcast.
Third sighting.
Yeah.
Third hearing.
It was so we came to New York the first time.
You did, and we did a onesie backs and forthsies.
We did a little Star Talk.
Best day of my life.
Yes.
That day we did two podcasts.
Yeah, so we did. Yeah, and I had you on. We just flipped the microphones around, and you became my guest on Star Talk Radio.
Yeah. It was a fun way. It was a fun to do. It was a fun way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Check the archives. The episode's about time.
And then after we were shooting the video version of Star Talk.
Wait, didn't I also describe a hypercube on that episode?
I believe you did describe a hypercube.
Yes.
You don't get that doesn't happen every day.
Has anything been have you had any new revelation since the first time that you were on this podcast? What has happened in your world scientifically since your first appearance?
Well, that's those are two separate things. What has kept me awake at night and what has happened scientifically, they can be the same thing. Mm-hmm. But let me share first with you what keeps me awake at night.
Okay.
Wondering whether human species is just too stupid to figure out the universe.
At this point.
I just wonder. I'd lose sleep over that. Because we define ourselves as intelligent because we made up the test to
That's
say
right.
that. And we sit alone at the top of the intelligence chart because we invented the exam. All right, and all the other species of life on Earth are not. So who is to say that the first species, us, to be intelligent, us, has just enough intelligence to actually decode everything that's decodable in the cosmos?
Probably not.
Exactly. And think of the next closest thing to us, the bonobo chimp, 98.5% identical DNA, yet you cannot teach them trigonometry. They have no concept of it.
I think they just don't want to learn.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're like, when am I going to use this?
When am I going
to
use this?
It's not that you can't, yeah. chimps. It's that you
it
don't
won't.
Want to learn.
Exactly. Yeah. So here we are.
But no, Bo, you didn't. What, guys? What? Yeah. What's the problem?
Chris.
What?
Chris,
Keith.
Chris,
oh, Keith. Chris. Shiny. Chris. Shiny.
So if that's only 1.5% difference in our DNA. And so imagine 1.5% beyond us rather than below us.
Sure.
In intelligence. Beyond us. They'd be talking. Their toddlers would talk about things that would completely confound us.
Potentially telepathically.
Possibly. That's how we always think about how intelligent species would communicate. But that could be just so trivial for them, they don't even bother.
Now, I don't want to. Maybe this goes
that
into.
Just broke my brain.
Maybe this goes into Kurzweil territory, but I always had this idea when I was growing up that the next major stage of evolution was essentially going to be manufactured by us and not something that was naturally selected, that we would actually create the intelligence in
of
our
course.
Own. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Why not? Yeah, once you... It's just a matter of the size of your tools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What?
I don't... Sorry.
But, mm-hmm. What was that, porn stash?
Is that my new moniker, porn stash? Porn stash,
hey,
come over here.
Hey, it's Dr. Porn Stash.
Yeah. Yeah. You.
The universe isn't the only thing that's ever expanding.
I mean, come on.
No, think about this. Think about this. We're in a room where I see bricks that have created a wall. Mm-hmm. We have tools that can create a brick and put a brick in its place
yes.
and make a building which is bigger than the brick.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's how you make big things.
Sure.
You have tools that control the little things that comprise it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we don't have tools to remove and add atoms in our genetic code. If we did, you just go in there, oh, you've got this condition, pull one out, put another one in, I have the tools to do it, you're good as new.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Right now, we're very clumsy on the atomic and molecular scale. We have no way to gain access to it in a way by means that give you confidence that you
sure.
that it, with the precision necessary to
like
do
like isolinear chips in the transporter
or
system.
Nanomites. We yes. need nanomites to go in and rebuild
exactly. And nano used in its proper term, not in the abused way everyone else is talking about it.
That's just small.
They talk about nanobots, and I see the bot crawling on the table. No, that's not a nanobot.
That's not a nanobot.
That's just a little robot. Okay, nano is 1 billionth. Of something. That's the metric prefix.
Maybe a microbot. Would it be a microbot?
Oh, yeah. Well, sure. No, that would be, micro would be, so we have centi, milli, it'd be a millibot.
A millibot.
Yeah, micro would be a millionth.
Mm-hmm.
So a nano is a billionth. And so a billionth of a meter is around the size of atoms and molecules, so that's good.
So that's what we really need to focus our energy on.
Actual nanobot.
Nanomites.
Yeah. And then you can manipulate your DNA in ways that you can turn us into whatever the hell you want.
That's not going to happen anytime
or,
soon.
Or better yet, here's a milder request of ourselves.
Okay.
Let's give us the survival capabilities that have already expressed themselves in nature. Newts can regenerate broken, lost limbs.
Yes.
We can't do that.
No.
We have military guys coming back with titanium legs because our species does not have the biological capacity to regenerate limbs, yet reptiles do.
Well, that okay? was the whole B-plot of the Amazing Spider-Man reboot.
Was it?
Yes. Yes, he was trying to
help out amputees.
Yeah, he was trying to help out amputees. And
wasn't that also the B-plot of Iron Man 3?
Well, listen... I just said a very Matt Myra thing.
Well,
but it wasn't.
What do you think of this?
So the point is, think about it. If reptiles made a list of who should be on the top of it, it would be, well, we can regenerate limbs and humans can't.
Yeah.
So they're way down on their scale.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, just any animal could put what it does that no one else can do and put that at the top of the scale and put humans way below them.
I do like that you said reptile and scale in the same sentence in two different usages.
That was not on purpose. Yeah, okay. But I'll take the credit for it.
What do you think of this idea of this theory that perhaps the universe is a simulation that's running?
Oh, yeah. I would call it hypothesis. Yes. Yeah.
Theory has to be tested.
Theory is tested, and it's an organizing principle of our understanding of nature, the theory of gravity, theory of relativity, quantum theory, evolutionary theory. Those are established truths of the world. So hypothesis. Yeah, I think it's kind of cool that we might be some PhD thesis simulation of a universe in somebody's lab. I don't have a problem with that. I just give me something to test that fact. And one of the ideas is, in any simulation that you create, there are always boundaries to certain variables, right? So you don't put unlimited range of things because your simulation doesn't need it. It would interfere. So you look around the universe and see if there are things that have no need to be limited, but you find out that they are. Mm-hmm. One of the things are cosmic rays. They have energies that go very high, but they seem to be butting up against a limit, as though some master programmer had said, we'll never need limits beyond this. Let's just put it there. And we're finding this out Matrix style.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So I would take the blue pill, I think. And just
it doesn't change anything.
No, which is the way. Right. No, sorry. I got my pills mixed up.
No, the blue pill's the one where
dangerous.
The blue pill's the one where you wake up. And you're fine. You forget it.
No. I would
take the red pill.
I'd red pill this.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to wake up in goo.
Because the...
Is that any different from...
take a drink.
Go on. I didn't even need to finish
Where's
that.
The drum?
I mean, listen. I mean, because the idea that...
I don't have a problem with it. Just give me something that... I don't have a problem with any of these ideas, however philosophically unsettling they may be. To people,
sure.
I don't have a problem with it. Give me a way to test it. That's all.
So this, why do you think it is that we lack the capacity to even grasp what the universe is? When you start trying to think like, well, if the universe is expanding, it's expanding into what? And what is beyond the limits of the universe?
Yeah, because our brain evolved on the Serengeti or wherever it was in Africa, where your biggest problem was food, sex, and shelter, not contemplating infinities. So we have no. If we needed to contemplate infinities to survive, calculus would be everybody's easiest topic. Because calculus is all about limits and infinities and getting finite answers from infinite regressions. So, our brain is not wired that way. So it is stressful for many people to think of infinities or infinitesimals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Anything that is uncountable doesn't blend well with our brains. That's why mathematics, you represent it on paper, on something that is logically consistent outside of your head. And in that way, I can say, yeah, this works on paper, so and it matches the universe, so we'll go with this. Whether or not you like it.
I don't know if I do or not.
Yeah.
It even bends my brain just to think about how a new mathematical principle is developed. That how do you take something, how do you solve something out of thin air?
Yeah, it would be space, out of space, thin space, just so you know.
Oh, okay, good, yeah, okay. Good.
Space is thinner than air, right? Okay.
So I saw this out of thin space. It just doesn't have the same ring
it
as
doesn't,
thin
not,
air.
It doesn't, but we can, if you use it enough, it might. Okay. I'm just saying thin air, air is not all that thin, okay?
Right.
It's got like, a gazillion particles per cubic centimeter. So, it's thinner than brick, but it's thicker than space.
Thicker than space,
yeah.
Got it.
So Isaac Newton, when asked... Once he came up with his laws of gravity law and motion, and brilliant guy, my man, Isaac Newton. He said, well, the orbits are ellipses, these flattened circles. And a friend of his said, Ike, I'm assuming.
He sure, called him Ike. Yeah, he's probably Ike.
He's a friend.
Yeah.
We call him Ike. Yeah. Ike, why do the planets orbit in this shape and not some other shape? Why not a rectangle? Or so I don't know. I'll get back to you. It comes out of my equations, but let me get back to you. Goes away for a few months, comes back, say, here's why. Because there's a cone, and you cut a cone horizontally, you get a circle. At an angle, you get an ellipse. Parallel to a side, you get a parabola. More than parallel, you get a hyperbola. And these are conic sections, and there's a 1 over r squared 14. It figures it out. And so the guy said, that's brilliant. How did you come to this? Well, I had to invent integral and differential calculus to solve the problem. So Isaac Newton does this on a dare, practically, and we're slogging through it in high school or college, And so, yeah, he invents this out of thin air as a tool to solve a bigger problem.
Because it's not like you can just...
He wanted to know the answer so badly...
that he had to make the system to figure it out.
He created the math to figure it out.
It's like on TMZ when they would do how many Starbucks...
Wait. Did I just talk about Isaac Newton and calculus and you said, it's like TMZ? Did you actually start that sentence?
Hey, I got a story. Apparently Isaac Newton was asleep under a tree and a not-so-friendly apple came along.
Ike's in trouble.
What do you guys
I have to pause. Wait. I just described Isaac Newton inventing calculus.
Yeah.
And your next sentence was, like on TMZ...
when they would tell you how many Starbucks cups tall somebody was.
I really
they take
love,
a picture of them holding a Starbucks cup, and they would just do the math.
I would love to see TMZ for like mathematicians, where they just where they were just paparazzing these mathematicians.
I like to imagine a bunch of guys around a table, Harvey's drinking something, and they're just they have measurements of Starbucks cups. They're cutting some in half, trying to figure out Anne Hathaway.
Well, what they're doing is they're inventing a unit of measure.
Yeah,
and Starbucks cups.
We had to invent the math with Starbucks cups in order to solve the problem.
Yeah, but was it what do you call it?
Grande or 20 venti?
Oh, they would let you know. They would let you know what size it was.
Yeah, you have to agree on the weights and measures.
Do some countries use venti cups and other countries use grande?
I don't know.
This is why you have bureaus of weights and measures to coordinate this.
We now have the Trente to deal with.
Trenta.
The National Institutes of Science and of Standards and Technology in the United States is a branch of science research of the federal government to standardize weights and measures. It's what they do.
So they make sure a pound's always a pound?
And that we still use it?
I'm just saying.
Kilogram.
Kilogram is always a kilogram.
Well, I remember
they don't worry about pounds.
Philosophy was my major, and I remember...
That can really mess you up.
It really does mess you up. Because
still to this day.
It's when it starts crossing over with math and science, and you're solving, you know, if you have to solve an argument using math, you know, P's and Q's and whatnot, and then... but the idea that the philosophy of science and math of like, well, why is a yard and what makes this this, you know, is I always felt like maybe there was a little too much question asking in philosophy because at a certain point it's just futile. Like, well, I don't know why this is a table.
Yeah, exactly. And my concern there is that the philosopher believes they're actually asking deep questions about nature. And to the scientist, it's, what are you doing? Why are you wasting your time? Well, why are you concerning yourself with the meaning of meaning?
Well, I think a healthy balance of both is good. A healthy balance of both
is
good.
Well, I'm still even worried about a healthy balance. Yeah, if you are distracted by your questions so that you cannot move forward, you're not being a productive contributor to our understanding of the natural world. And so the scientist knows when the question, what is the sound of one hand clapping, is a pointless delay in your progress.
And it's this.
Yep, that's it.
Cool.
This is the Simpsons episode.
Yeah.
What, are you dumb? Can't you hear it? It's right here. It's this.
Then they say, well, how do you define clapping? And then all of a sudden it devolves into a discussion of the definitions of words.
Right.
And I'd rather keep the conversation about ideas.
Yeah.
And when you do that and you don't derail yourself on questions that you think are important because philosophy class tells you this.
Right.
But the scientist says, look, I got all this world of unknown out there. I'm moving on. I'm leaving you behind. And you can't even cross the street because you're distracted by what you are sure or deep questions you've asked of yourself. I don't have the time for that.
Well, I've also felt that it was a fat load of crap, as one could define what crap is and the essential qualities that make up crap. How you grade a philosophy paper, that always infuriated me. Like, these are thoughts and ideas that I have about questions.
Chris, I think we all agree you turned out okay.
Okay, I turned out okay. Mm-hmm. But philosophy was a good major for comedy, I think, because it does get you to sort of ask a lot of ridiculous questions about things.
No, but you need people to laugh at your ridiculous questions.
So I don't understand. That's the other side. What are
you
trying to say?
Can it also lead you into the futility of things, though, where it's like why is this and why do I care?
Well, yeah.
I should not care because it's all pointless.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that ultimately if you ask enough questions, it's just this sort of bottomless pit of, I don't know.
Like, it just becomes nihilism. So yeah. Philosophy becomes nihilism?
At a certain point, I think.
Nihilism is a kind of philosophy.
And then when you're in the bottom of the pit, you're slowly digested over 1,000 years.
No. I'm sorry.
Right? No, I'm pretty sure.
You're thinking the pit of Sarlacc.
Yeah. But it's a pit.
It is a pit.
Wait, is this a bottomless pit?
Well, you're slowly digested over 1,000 years. It's not a bottomless pit. It's the pit that Boba Fett flies into in Return of the Jedi.
Oh, okay. So I had a conversation with my daughter about bottomless pits. I think you met her, or you gave her your...
She's super cool. Your daughter is super smart and super cool.
You gave her your TARDIS iPhone cover.
I did give her the TARDIS iPhone cover, and then she came to our podcast and met Matt Smith.
Oh, yes, she did. Yes, I forgot, at Comic-Con.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, your daughter is
so she's Whovian,
ridiculously smart.
She's Whovian, and so we talked about the bottomless pit, and I asked her how does one die in a bottomless pit, and she said of dehydration.
No, by the way, I think it's notable to point out that your daughter is 15.
No, she's 17 now.
17 now, okay.
Right? No, but at the time, yeah, she was 15. Yeah, so you dive down, and I thought, oh, why? And it's because that's the first thing you die of if you have no access to nourishment or anything. You die of absence of water. So that would be 7 days through the fall.
Or boredom.
Nihilism.
Oh, so boring.
Nihilism.
Why didn't I fall with an iPod or something?
And you keep falling.
Nihilism.
Yeah, so when in search and rescue, they, after a certain number of days, it's search and recovery.
Yeah.
Because they calculate that you will not have survived the absence of water.
Because
you can go without food for way longer than you can go without water.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
None of us want to.
Is she going
to
go into science?
No, but she likes science. And she took, like, she's way wicked smart compared to me when I was in high school. But she'll be a freshman at Harvard next year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, good
so,
lord!
Yeah, so she's going to study East Asian cultures.
Pony up the cash
and languages. Start it now. Save it up. So no, but she's definitely scientifically literate. That she was not going to leave the house.
I will tell her all the good burrito places around
there. Yeah, Matt's from Boston. Boston. He can give you the. I was in my girlfriend Chloe and I were in New York a few months.
Tell Chloe I said hi.
I will tell Chloe.
Where is she now?
Hi.
I've never seen you without her.
Chloe's working. She's working. The same as I'm working now.
Okay.
So she's working on her stuff now. But we went to the planetarium to see the new show.
Oh, my planetarium.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So you saw the dark.
We saw
universe.
Dark. Yes. Yeah. That's right, about dark matter.
Yeah, and dark energy.
It's
and
so
dark
great energy. That he literally can say my planetarium.
Oh, no, sorry. Okay. The planetarium of which I serve as director. Okay. How should I word this?
I think we're going to allow the possessive pronoun in this case. We're going to not.
The keys in my pocket open its door. Right.
Well, we had a so.
And it is my voice coming through the universe there.
The last time.
I think I got this one.
I'm saying it's cool that you can.
Yeah.
Although while I was busy making Cosmos, others wrote this show and created the show. So I can, it's my planetarium, but it's a collaboration to make the product.
Well, it's also just a shorthand. Like I would say, if I were talking about At Midnight Ago, it's my show. I mean, it's not really, you know, a bunch of people work on the show.
Yeah.
The show with comics.
But what
the
I was saying
producers.
Was, it's cool that he can.
It's
say
cool
my,
that he can say that because how many people can say that? Just count the number of planetariums. But the last time Chloe
very
and
numerical
I...
numerical of you.
Yeah,
very
thank
good.
You.
Very mathematical.
Thank you. I solved it.
Count them with venti
I didn't
cups.
Want to end it with philosophy. I wanted to have a concrete answer.
Okay.
So the last time we were at the Hayden Planetarium was after we shot Star Talk, Chloe and I, and you and a bunch of very, very smart NASA people, and I think RZA, right?
Jizza.
All went back to your office
yes.
and hung out and laughed. And Chloe, who was a huge fan of yours, you drew a question. She said, please draw a question mark behind my ear. We then proceeded. You had to go home, but the rest of us, NASA scientists, Jizza, Chloe, myself, wandered around the streets of New York at 1 a.m. trying to Yelp a tattoo parlor where Chloe then had the question mark tattooed in the back of her ear.
Well, there's a quote from Rainer Maria Rilke, the poet, and one of the poems ends, learn to love the questions themselves.
Oh, see, now that tattoo has an even better story.
Yeah. And what is that great rock song from the late 60s, early 70s? Question. Uh-huh. Well, who did it? It's, Moody Blues. Questions, call question.
Look I was worried it's you were
great,
talking.
It's a great song.
For a second, I thought you were talking about the Authority song by John Cougar Mellencamp, but it's not the same.
No, it's not even John.
No, check this one out.
But yes, because I feel not just scientifically is it important to ask good questions, but I feel like the key to any good internal dialogue with yourself, because some people say monologue, but I think people actually have dialogues with themselves.
They're in institutions.
Because you. No, but honestly, think about it.
I don't know.
Think about
don't
this.
Don't encourage this, okay?
No. Think about this for a second.
I don't know who your audience is, but if you encourage them to have conversations with themselves.
But
I knew it.
But when you think about things and you ask your brain questions, you're basically throwing a question out and then an answer fires back. So you are in a somewhat of a dialogue
you're
with your brain.
You're reflecting, okay. But the question is not some other entity. It's still me.
It's still you.
Okay.
But you're basically shouting into the void of your own mind, and then an answer is being fired back.
Speak of the void only form. Of your own mind.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, my planet... Oh, I don't have a planetarium. But the idea being
I found
that...
the song.
You found a question?
Yeah.
But the idea being that you... Oh, yeah. I know the song.
Version, maybe.
I don't recognize the line.
Yeah. 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 I don't think I ever knew the song was called Question.
Yeah.
Just grooving on it, man. Now we're in philosophy class.
Question mark in the series. Let's cover this. Think about it.
This is playing. This is when you need to walk in a handyman suit and go, I hear your planetarium's broken.
That's one of my favorite songs of the era. This question.
And so 1970.
In fact, I tweeted, Macy's, during Christmas season, had in big, bold letters across their huge store in Herald Square, Manhattan, New York City, believe. And I said, wouldn't it be cool if one year, instead, they had questions?
Oh, yeah.
I tweeted that.
And did they do? Are they going to do that?
I don't know. But people react. Yeah. Fucking A. Yeah.
Question Santa Claus.
The two places I go to whenever I'm in New York is your planetarium and that Macy's because I love wooden escalators.
Yeah, they have wooden escalators. Yep.
That's my favorite thing.
So what?
They're like a thousand cavemen.
Yeah.
You know.
Is there like a guy on the side just cranking in?
Little gerbils on the
side. Yeah. Just like a bigger guy. Kind of like, oh, here
so
we
this,
go.
And bigger guy playing the accordion.
This is a principle that I think people should apply from science, which is in this internal monologue, dialogue, whatever you want to call it, is asking good, effective questions because you will get answers back in your mind no matter what type of question you ask.
However, not all questions are created equal.
That's correct.
So at the end of Isaac Newton's book called Optics, he has his last several chapters are called queries. These are crumbs that fell off his plate that he didn't have time to get to. But he's offering it to others in case in their lives they can value that this is a place to devote their attention.
So it's basically like an old-timey message board.
And it says, the stars in the night sky, could they be just like the sun, except so far away they become as dim as they are?
Well, yes.
Yes.
Good job. Nicely done.
Well, the point is, the man was connected to the cosmos as no one has been, I think, before or since. Because you read the questions that he poses. He's plugged in. There are people who ask questions. I have another book of someone who had what called a new theory of the universe, and he's wondering if the spiral nebulae are other galaxies like our own. Turned out to be true. But then he's saying, but if they are, then they each must have their own god. And then he drew pictures of God's eye. Like the eye on the top of the pyramid on the dollar bill. Like God, different gods. And he totally went off the deep end there. So just because you can ask some good question doesn't mean all your questions are good.
Some Illuminati shit.
Well, yeah. the other thing...
So he broke his brain?
It just broke his brain. He just started thinking so hard it just broke his brain. But the idea that... That, you know, the Newtonian question is different than going, hey, what's that crap up there? He's basically answering the question in the question.
In the question, exactly. He said, gee, what are the stars? No.
Yeah. He's
like, I wonder if they are thus.
Do you think that's where God just poked pinholes up there in the fabric of the universe?
And so poetic. Like, it sounded like you were just reciting a poem from somebody.
Did they figure out why?
That's just kind of how they wrote back
then. Did they figure out why he was so plugged in and smart the same way that they said, oh, well, Einstein's brain was slightly larger in some areas?
Yeah, so... there's certain truths about him that were not true for most other people, even to this day. All evidence suggests that he was a virgin when he died.
Oh.
So is there still chance?
I'm probably not going to figure out the universe, but it's worth it.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, go to any really smart kid and go, you got two choices to make.
And then cut to the kid later is going, dab, dab, dab.
Huge grin.
But I think maybe there is something to be said that, you know, the sort of the bigger answer is that he probably just focused all of his energy all the time on these questions.
And in fact, Albert Einstein made just such a comment. I won't get it exactly, but he said, people think I'm smart, which of course he is, but what they don't realize is how much time I've spent thinking about problems that other people just walk on by.
Sure.
You know? And another thing about Isaac Newton, he had an intensity of focus on what, you know, kind of like an autistic intensity, mm-hmm. where you, this is it, and you forego personal hygiene, you mm-hmm. know, and yeah. social contact and all the rest. So, yeah, I mean, the man was brilliant.
So how do you balance being able to focus on these issues and then having a family and running a planetarium?
Yeah, it's hard.
And doing Cosmos.
It's something gives at some point. And Cosmos was a huge hit on my calendar. I mean, we filmed all around the world, Iceland. Yeah, Iceland should not be named Iceland. It should be named Volcano Land, right? it's all volcanic, and there's gurgling. The ground gurgles because wow. there's hot springs. All their energy, or most of their energy, is from geothermal sources because it's a volcano.
Well, I think Reykjavik is actually onomatopoetic. Because that's the sound the land makes. When it. Wow. What's wrong with you? Don't judge me, Jonah.
I'm not. I'm okay. enjoying it.
Okay, good.
I celebrate that.
It doesn't sound like celebration.
No, this is how I party.
No, that's... It sounds like mild shame.
Hey!
We're having a party.
So just all around the world in all these places where great science had happened in the past, and there's some green screening on location. And so you put it all together, we've got 13 episodes of Cosmos. But it was a huge hit on my calendar. Your kids get older and you miss it, you know. So it's not something I would, you know.
Did you miss any birthdays?
No. We got came in back for those.
That's good. Yeah.
How ironic that while discussing the history of time, that you had to make sure to track time
yes.
in your actual life.
Exactly. The billions of years at some point have to become my calendar.
Did you practice billions and billions of years to hit the Sagan? Do you have your own billions?
No. We go.
Oh, what was that?
68 Dodge Charger.
I got the Sagan billions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Billions and billions.
Yeah.
I got that.
You got
I got
voice.
That. So I said, well, voice. How about trillions and trillions?
Whoa! One up!
Take that, Sagan!
Took every line and just
tweak it up a notch.
Yeah, yeah. Take it up. Quadrillions and quadrillions. Yeah,
quadrillions and googles. And
so... You know, this idea, first of all, I think it's...
By the way, congratulations on your show.
Oh, thank you very much.
No, it's fun. If I'm not too sleepy, I watch it.
I appreciate that. You're doing a little walk-on in the show today, which I'm very excited about.
Yes, I'm happy. I'm glad I didn't know how I could slot in, but you found a way.
We did find a way.
So,
very good. We found a way.
Life finds a way.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with
chaotician.
Wait. Life finds a way, except when it doesn't, because 97% of all species that ever lived on this earth are now extinct.
Oh.
I'm getting Goldblum on the phone now.
So therefore, the life finds a way is myopic, actually.
To say though that life does life is energy and energy is never destroyed, and so then it just kind of seems to roll in. I don't even know why I tried to start say something smart to you
because you burned a lot of things are energy, including the light bulb.
Yes.
And it heats the air, and the air radiates to space. So, the energy's still there. It's not usable.
You'll have to forgive Jonah. Forms. He's not a virgin anymore.
Yeah, so there's certain high levels of energy and very low levels of energy. When you hit the lowest level of energy, which is heat, basically, it's very hard to get that back to higher levels of energy. So when you die, your body temperature drops to air temperature.
Mm-hmm.
And normally when we touch each other's hands, you're not thinking about it, but you are much warmer than the air around you. So we call that normal. When you die, you hit 72 degrees. You say, the body's cold.
You're actually normal.
No, yeah, you're actually normal. You're the temperature of everything else you're touching
normalized.
In the room. Yeah. And where did that heat go? It warmed the air, and the air radiated it to space.
You know, maybe instead of death, we should just say that people have normalized. Well, they've normalized.
Yeah.
They've essentially gone to their ground state, literally.
You've lost your metabolism. Your metabolism is the expression of life.
Right.
Your metabolism maintains your body temperature at 25 degrees warmer than the air would rather have it be.
Well, the other thing about life finds a way is that it sort of presupposes presupposes an.
But I'm not agreeing that life signs away.
No, because it presupposes that there's some idea of sentience behind life.
Not
agree. At the same time.
No, no. Let me not say that I don't agree. It's not. It has nothing to do with my opinion. 97% of all species that ever lived are extinct. So what could you possibly mean by saying life always finds a way?
Oh, you know, like Jurassic Park.
It was the first part of the line.
Oh, you're quoting movie scripts.
Yeah, first part of the line was cut. It was actually it was 3% of life finds a way.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. They just were like,
that's weird. But it was just for time.
It doesn't feel enough.
Wait, there's more. You know, so we only use 10% of our brain argument. Okay, that's also BS, right? That's a reinterpretation of a sentence that was, this 100 years ago, a neuroscientist, they didn't call him that back then, but a brain person said, we only know what 10% of our brain is used for. That became, we only use 10% of our brain.
Well, because that's how people think of things. Oh, well, if I don't know what it is, then it must not be there.
Yeah. Right, and therefore you're not using it. Opposed to, the brain is a complex place. We've mapped out this 10% of the reasons, and here's what it's used for. So plus, we only use 10% of the brain became the clarion call for parents trying to get their kids to excel.
Sure.
Who might have otherwise been deadbeats.
Strive for 11%, maybe.
Yes, so that's another case where a number just takes on a life of its own.
Yeah.
But it has no foundation in reality or truth.
Huh. But it's do you think, though, buzzwords or kind of phrases like that might hit the right person to make them actually investigate that stuff? Or do you think...
I don't know. I'll give you some more. These people say, it's darkest before dawn. I never even heard of that until people started telling to me. I said, what? No, it's not darkest...
Mama Cass said the darkest hour is just before dawn.
Yeah, it's just false, okay? Yeah. It was never true. If you want to pick the darkest moment, get the exact middle between sunrise and sunset. It'll be around midnight, okay?
Ooh,
our show's
nice.
The
it's the darkest hour. Our show's the darkest hour.
Have a nice.
Yes, if you had to pick a darkest hour, it would be the midnight hour.
Oh, our show, we are the darkest hour.
Yeah, and you can go ahead and use that.
See the stuff we don't even put in. It's real dark.
It's real dark.
So that's like the worst analogy ever. That's like the most,
to say the darkest before the dawn?
No, but the reason why people say it is to lift you up out of your depressions.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
When you're at your lowest, then dawn will come. Yeah. So there are these phrases that were basically bastardized to support our psychological states.
Well, Mama Cass also probably did an Iceland-sized mountain of drugs right before she said that at the same time.
I think we all did.
Ham sandwich. Right?
And a sandwich. Come on.
What? I was just speaking the...
But there's other things. Because I learned science before I learned many of these sayings. People say, you eat like a bird. I say, you mean you eat a lot? No, I eat a little. Well, birds eat a lot. Anytime you see a bird, it's eating or looking for food, okay? You ever put food in front of a bird and said, no, I'm full. No, I can't. No.
This just means don't have a scientist over to your house because they're going to poke holes in everything you believe.
No, I'm just saying.
You know who's not fun at parties? Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I get it, Neil. We don't really eat like birds. Jeez, what is
that? I just want to use a little hyperbole around here.
No, what I'm saying is I knew about the bird metabolism. Birds are warm-blooded. And so, like us, they have to basically eat continuously. You know, you have to realize what we must look like to crocodiles. You could toss a chicken a month to a crocodile, and it's fine because it doesn't have to maintain a body temperature above the air temperature,
sure,
as we do. That's hugely energetically consumptive to do this. So you wake up, I gotta eat. Oh, mid-morning, I gotta have a snack. Lunch, I gotta eat again. Every 3 hours, you're shoving
just to maintain your 25 degrees.
Basically to maintain that body temperature above. A crocodile is the temperature of its surroundings. So it only needs food just to move its limbs, to beat its heart. And so a chicken a month is fine. So all this video, a crocodile is being ravenously hungry. They waited a month because that's not interesting footage. Only the point where it eats do you then show that and you think that's all they want to do is eat.
Like when James Bond had to get away from all those crocodiles and Live and Let Die.
He ran across them. Is that not the one where he ran across them? Yeah,
that it had been a month. Maybe it had been a month or so.
Yeah, and the last thing it wants to do is eat you after it just ate. All right, whereas we're eating constantly. So birds are warm-blooded. And they're relatively small, so they have to eat essentially all the time.
Are you... first of all, it is amazing that Cosmos is coming to network television.
Oh, yeah. Let me give you a list of 11 things, and taking any one of them alone is amazing, and they're all happening together. You ready? So, Cosmos, a 13-part series, will have a sequel. It will appear on network television.
Mm-hmm.
On Fox. Okay? On a Sunday night.
So is this like a science competition show?
A Sunday night. In prime time. After it had been promoed during the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Fox had the Super Bowl. After it had been promoed during the World Series in the bottom of the seventh inning in Game 3 on Saturday night. And it is airing on 171 stations around the world in 45 languages. Any one of those sentences.
And it's produced by Stewie.
It's a mind blow. Okay? And so the fact that it's all happening together is a stunning statement that there is a recognition by forces that be that science deserves to be mainstreamed.
Was Seth MacFarlane?
Seth MacFarlane brought us to Fox.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
Seth MacFarlane of Stewie's voice.
So yeah. So it's
the
he's
power.
Brian Griffin. He's Brian.
The power who breathed life into Stewie. Yes.
But it is.
So people think of it, well, is Stewie going to pop up? Seth is involved, so what jokes are you going to tell? No, this is Cosmos. It's in the spirit of the original series. He's a talented guy, and he likes science. If you watched Family Guy, every other episode, there's some reference to science. Poking fun at people who don't know science. Stewie has a time machine, for goodness sake. Do you know Seth came to New York to visit? He said, Neil, I'm coming to town. Can you do lunch? I said, sure, I'll do lunch. Fine, I moved some stuff around. We did lunch, and we're having lunch, and he's asking me 30 questions about cosmology. The entire lunch was about cosmology. 6 months later, Stewie goes back to the beginning of the universe, observes the Big Bang with his time machine, comes back, concludes that him rebooting his time machine started the Big Bang itself, and at the end, I get a full card credit, science advisor, Neil deGrasse Tyson. So the man likes science.
That's a good thing.
This reminds me of the time Joan Jett and the Blackhearts went to Europa.
Yeah, boy.
So there's a whole side of Seth that is revealing itself in his participation in the series.
Well, I think it's great that because obviously someone like Seth can go to Fox and go, you should put this on mainstream, and they'd go, oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, so at the beginning,
we ran Dads for 22 episodes.
At the beginning, maybe no one told me this, and I don't know, and maybe I'm just reading, but I think at the beginning they may have felt some obligation to him because he's a big product of theirs. Okay, let's make Seth happy. We'll do maybe a pilot or a couple of episodes here. Then they started warming up to it. They said, hey, let's do a whole 13.
Yeah.
Hey, let's put this budget in it. Hey, let's put... By the way, the international distribution is... Fox owns 3/4 of National Geographic Channel. And National Geographic has all these inlets to Asia and Latin America and Europe.
Yeah, that's right, because Cosmos is going to first run on Fox, and then the next night it's going to be on National Geographic.
National Geographic domestically and National Geographic internationally in the 72 hours that follow it.
Oh, that's rad.
So... Wow. And so, I was in Latin America. They said they found something they're going to dub for me.
This
and
is,
I said, wait, but.
Billones y billones. triones y triones.
And I said, what? I can't. And El Cosmos. I couldn't.
Neil deGrasse Tyson. Carl Sagan.
Can you tell me not to lower the bar on the Haunted Mansion carriage?
Please do not lower the bar on Haunted Mansions. I will lower it for you. Like, it's that voice. Yes, it's not.
They also do Spanish.
Yeah.
And Espanol.
At the end, we always used to go, finalmente boo.
So there's actually a combination of dubbing for people. Apparently in Latin America, I didn't know this, many people watch TV the way the rest of us would listen to a radio.
Yeah.
Just kind of on in the background and you're doing dishes. And so subtitles don't work for that. You know, so TV is less of a cinematic 5.1 experience than it is just information that's coming to you over the screen. So
well, it is,
hence the dubbing.
I cannot stress enough how important it is for that's people great. To watch Cosmos to make sure that we get more science programming in the mainstream. More,
I think, if it succeeds, I think the other networks are going to say, "Hey, why didn't we?
We should do this too." Yeah.
And I think we got enough people in the wings here because I'm going to Bahamas after this, and you're not going to see me for 5 years. I think we got enough people to rise up and be tapped for this.
I'm excited because I've run out of Nova Science Nows to watch.
Oh, well, thank you for that.
Well, I think it's also important in watching the Bill Nye Ken Ham debate where Bill just kept saying,
oh, ham on rye. Ham on Nye.
Yeah. Oh, you saw that episode?
it's just as Bill kept saying, if we don't pursue science education, we are going to not be a world power anymore. Yeah. It isn't.
We're not going to be world anything.
Yeah. So it is very, very, very important.
Oh, by the way, no one has said this, but I have to say it.
Please.
The Ham kept using as a rebuttal this guy who invented the MRI machine, mm-hmm. and who was a young Earth creationist. So therefore, you don't have to. You can be a young Earth creationist and still create important, marketable product. Mm-hmm. Okay. What no one said. Sorry, I screamed.
No, that's okay. Please, no. You're excited.
The levels. Excited. Sorry. Good. Let me fix the thing on the microphone here. Okay. We good? Sorry.
Take two.
Take two. What no one said was the person who discovered the principle on which the MRI is based. His name was Edward Purcell. He was my physics professor in college. He was interested in the behavior of nuclei in atoms scattered in the interstellar medium, and one of those nuclei, the hydrogen atom, has a flip of the quantum spin orientation of the electron, and it spins once every 10 million years. The spin flip happens once every 10 million years, and you can measure that in space. If that happens once every 10 million years, how do you have a 6,000-year-old Earth? He could not have had a mindset to think about nuclei the way he did to make the discovery that nuclei respond to magnetic fields and create a resonance with them to create nuclear magnetic resonance, which is the foundation of magnetic resonance imaging. So here's this guy inventing a thing based on somebody else who recognized a vast and infinite universe that's way the hell older than 6,000 years.
Yes, so ultimately...
That doesn't happen.
So ultimately, his example had to recognize science in order to make the thing.
Science of the past. Science of history. Science of time baselines that go far beyond any discussion in the Bible as interpreted by literalists. So no one jumped in there and said, I'm saying it here and now for the first time, on Nerdist.
Thank you very much. And this, I think, scoop. It's very appropriate.
Yeah, yeah, what a scoop.
It is a good scoop. It is a fantastic scoop.
Oh, by the way, and the nuclear magnetic resonance, that's one of the taboo N-words, you know, yeah. Over the two. So wait.
So different from the other one.
Yeah, yeah. So in hospitals, you're not walking into a nuclear magnetic resonance imager. They took away the N-word, because people are afraid of the word
nuclear. Yeah.
So just this is MRI, magnetic, not nuclear magnetic resonance.
Yes, because
imaging.
People think that nuclear means bomb goes off, not just of or pertaining to the nucleus.
The nucleus of the atom, right. So that got purged. That way you will go into the machine to do this.
Well, there was, someone did tell me once that this idea that you cannot reason someone out of a position they did not reason themselves into. Yeah, I think that was actually Tim Ferriss who told us that on our podcast.
Yeah, so that's a well-known... approach or attitude to have, and you got to be more strategic. But I think it's funner to say than it really is true in reality. I think for half the people that's true. Mm-hmm. The other half, you can show them some really mind-blowing things and shock them out of whatever was their philosophy of thought into a new understanding of the world. So I think you can use reason to get someone out of a thought that they didn't use reason to get into. But it's a good prep for you when you start your argument. If you're trying to argue with someone who is blinded by their religious, political, or cultural philosophy.
Well, I will say this about the debate. The thing that I was impressed by
was... The Ham on Nye debate.
The Ham on Nye debate was the tone of it, because normally when those debates happen, it just devolves into name calling, and I felt like both parties were respectful to the other side. I mean, even though, of course, I'm biased, but in my opinion, you know,
6,000 years. we all know, Chris.
Bill Nye basically brought Excalibur.
Wait, when you speak the truth, it's not bias. Yeah. Just so you know, okay.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, like Bill.
That's a tweet. I'm going to tweet that.
Bill, I would let Bill debate anything.
Oh, I'm excited. I'll favorite it right now.
I'm going to get on that bandwagon and retweet it right when you
I would let Bill Nye debate anything for me. Mm-hmm. That guy is phenomenal.
Yeah, we all, I mean, I didn't, I'm too old, but others, you know, they learn science from the guy. I mean, yeah, it's when, I think it's, Bill got successful because we have lazy science teachers. So rather than them teaching, or they're not as competent, right? So they say, I got this 20-minute clip of Bill. I'll put it in the science classroom. And so everybody sees Bill in the science classroom.
But you and Bill have the same thing, which is that you're able to take scientific principles and make them interesting and engaging and fun. And that's very, very, very important. Not everyone can do that. Some people, and you know a lot of scientists, some people are so science-minded that they really lack the ability to communicate with non-science-y people.
Yeah, and so, by the way, we were never rewarded for that historically. So you can't really blame scientists for that.
No.
Yeah, that's like blaming you know, a Miss America for not knowing advanced calculus.
Sure.
It's not part of why she got there, right? So, and I don't know why they always ask them about world politics.
Yeah.
What is that? Why? Yeah. Like, well, they're people who are beautiful and maybe smart,
well, if
but
they're
primarily beautiful.
If they're going to represent our country, they need to know politics when they battle in a cage match.
No, no. So here's the thing. Do we ask diplomats beauty secrets?
We should not do that.
Yeah, those questions are that's gotcha journalism.
They would just be
that's
like,
right there. That's what I'm saying. If you want gotcha journalism, go ask diplomats about beauty secrets. They'll be clueless.
How do you groom your eyebrows? You can groom your eyebrows.
I know, that's
racist. I'm going to take a picture of him tweeting and then tweet the picture of him tweeting the tweet.
Okay. Oh, this is getting super meta.
Pose it. Yeah.
Oh my God, this is gonna be like the last scene of Reservoir Dogs. Who's got the fifth iPhone? Someone shot Chris Penn.
You are
actually, I'm
get
a,
not
no
biased.
Here. I'm going to get hard lock in the shot.
Hard lock.
Thanks.
Anytime.
Jonah, you need to scoot in a little if you want to get
you
in.
I can't get mad at my shot then.
Are speaking the truth. So
this is really.
You are not biased. Any is that the whole tweet there? That's a short tweet.
You are not biased if you were representing the truth.
Anytime
you are
ever speak the truth, have it. Anytime you ever speak. I'm trying to read this here.
Hashtag doing Nerdist podcast.
Chris.
What?
I'm just
trying to get a little promo for the company.
Stop
okay?
the branding.
No, I just want to brand his tweet. I just want to brand his tweet. You know, in the old days.
He owns part of that tweet.
Subsidiary of Legendary.
Okay. All I'm saying is, I'm going to send over the paperwork.
Yeah,
you can sign on your behalf of the tweet. And I'm like, no. Done.
Wait, hold on. No, I can do this better. You speak among yourselves.
Oh, yeah, sure.
You want to know, here, we're going to talk the religion science thing. It's like I find the people that are religious and kind of go against what the things that, like, science to me is makes the entire world beautiful at the moment that you're living in it.
Yes.
You can look around, you can find beauty wherever it is. Where people who are religious will say that it's something else that they're seeing and say that they're kind of working towards a thing that's going to happen after they're gone, which I think is kind of insulting to the beauty of the entire universe.
Well, I don't fault anyone for having religion in their life. I think, if they love that and enjoy that and need that, but when it kind of gets in the way of advancing us as a culture, because in my estimation, and maybe Neil can tell me that I'm not correct about this, but
you're not correct. Before I heard you, you're not correct.
Now, is it going to be weird if I actually am? I just feel like there has been 100% evidence in the past that religion has had to ebb its definitions to accommodate science, but the reverse has never actually been true.
That's correct. The reverse has never been true at any time. So the point, my issue, and I agree with you, people, religion brings comfort to people. I don't have an issue. In a free country, a country founded on religious freedoms, that's a big part of how America came to be. People who came here were escaping religious persecution, and so we all have freedom of religion. That's how that played out. And so the issue is, if you think your religion equals science and you try to put it in the science classroom and it's not,
right?
Then I have an issue. Otherwise, I don't go knocking on the preacher's door saying that might not necessarily be true. You don't even have atheists picketing outside of churches. That doesn't happen.
Well, I just don't think that,
the tweet.
You got it. What is it?
I kept it simple. KISS. You are not biased anytime you ever speak the truth. Tweet.
Nice.
There you go.
You can feel a ripple in the matrix.
Right. Oh,
because we all took the red pill.
Wait, should I? I'm sorry, I didn't hashtag Nerdist.
No,
it's
sorry.
Fine. Don't worry about it.
You sure?
I was
that.
Totally. Take care of that. Totally
fine. Since you did it in the room, he does have a device that just puts that on there. Look at it right now. It's
he actually bought Hoosay. It's just Nerdist.
Say. Not buy anything. I did not buy Hoosay.
I like that you're at a point where you have to. Like,
that didn't actually happen. This is not so ridiculous anymore.
Already 56 retweets and 37 favorites.
Yeah, I know. That's
you're a machine.
No NDG gets it done.
That's a bot.
Thank you. Somebody's taking notice.
Why didn't you hashtag it porn stash? Just to confuse people.
Porn
what?
Stash.
You are never biased as long as you speak the truth.
Porn stash? What is that?
Keep them guessing.
Keep them guessing.
Question.
All the time.
It's 127 retweets. That was pretty
damn.
Good. Okay.
100 favorites. Okay.
But you got your own planetarium. You got a lot of retweets. Yeah, you're right.
No, I wake up every morning. I'm at I'm crossing 1.7 million Twitter followers, and I wake up and say, guys, did I tell you I'm an astrophysicist? It's like,
but that's
I'm surprised every day.
That's cool. Important for our culture.
I do not take any of this for granted. It is holy. There's got to be some hungry underbelly there that is not being served by all the ways. You know, people, the world is not recognizing that many people are hungry to learn, hungry to be enlightened.
But most people need science the way that you're able to deliver it to them. Most people need science in an engaging way, in a way that's very, that, you know, you can rattle off a bunch of a character string of scientific terms, but then turn around and then say, it's like this. And then people go, oh, I totally understand.
Okay, thank you. But they still have to want to care about it. And the fact that there is a way in, I think, is I'm surprised and delighted every day.
I think when people are learning anything, then their brain sort of rewards them, like, oh, I just learned. Oh, wow, that's really interesting.
And some people confuse the pleasure of learning, because they've maybe never felt pleasure learning before, with sensuality. So then you get words like, oh, I just had a nerdgasm. You know?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, why would anyone say that? Unless there's the juxtaposition of the good feeling of...
Well, is this the stash talking? What's happening?
No, this
no. No, Newton said that. The other guy said that when Newton brought him all of the conical stuff.
Oh, my gosh. This is amazing.
His stash is sentient. But you know, what I was gonna say before is that if someone doesn't want to believe in something, with the debate, it was a lot of you know, Bill saying, well, you know, here's why we know this and this and this, and then Ken Ham saying, like, well, there's no proof of that, and Bill Nye going, well, actually, there's a lot of proof of that. Mm-hmm. You're not acknowledging it. That at a certain point, it becomes like the philosophical debate of, like, well, how do we know anything then? And then, you know, then you fall down the chasm, and guess what? You die of dehydration.
Oh, scientific callback.
Nice. Well, this is this hour just flew by, Neil.
It's been an hour?
I adore talking to you.
Really?
How did we do it?
It's only been 20 minutes. Whoa.
Oh, we got time.
Well, this 20
minutes. Wait. Let me do some time dilation relativity on
please
this.
Please do. Please do. Dilate us time-wise. do you have... You must have your stock answers from people like, when the DeLorean, when is that going to happen? And you're like, well, it's not going to.
No. I once tweeted, I said, this one got a lot of retweets. I was delighted to know this. I said, there's such a thing as flux, and there's such a thing as a capacitor, but there's no such thing as a flux capacitor. That's all I said. But they said, but can there be? Might there be? You know, so I was just, I don't want to be a, you know,
you can build one, it'll just blink at you.
Well, on the transporter, they have the Heisenberg compensator in Star Trek.
Yeah, to fix
the Heisenberg principle.
Yeah.
They just have
they're like, let's just call it the Heisenberg compensator.
What's
like,
it do?
I don't know what it
it's in the title. Compensates for the Heisenberg uncertainty principle.
Don't worry about it.
Then there's this other device that adjusts for the
inertial dampers.
The inertial dampers. Otherwise, you'd be a pile of goo at the back of the wall, going from zero to light speed in a matter of seconds.
Hey, how come if all the stuff we're made of is so unpredictable, how are we able to predict anything?
We're predictable macroscopically, not microscopically.
Microscopically, right.
And that's we are predictable, but we are precisely predictable, but only statistically, microscopically. And we're very predictable macroscopically. So it's not this world of unknowns. Well, oh my gosh, where do we turn? What do we know? We don't know anything. We know a lot. We know a lot. We can't tell you exactly what this atom is going to do next, but an ensemble of a billion atoms, we got it. We can tell you how they're going to behave, what they're going to do, what the temperature is, what the rate. We got it.
So all we need is another Newton to go and sit with that for a couple of months and come back unshowered and go, here's a diagram.
Unshowered?
I got the answers to everything. Go take a shower first.
Sorry, I'm too busy not having sex with anyone.
Ike. You know, he's not fun to have around, but damn, his ideas are fucking great.
I hope when he was done with science at the end of his life, he was like, all right, I'll give it one shot. Like, yeah. I hope that he...
But I keep thinking, you know, if I could go back in time and bring someone into the present, it would be Isaac Newton. I'd just show him all the stuff, derive. But then I thought...
I don't know if his brain would be able to handle.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. What's that in your hand? Well, it's a smartphone. What's a phone?
Do you remember there's a
right?
I mean, I took you back too far.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right. Well, where does he get the time from a satellite? What's a satellite? Well, you first wrote the equation that enabled this.
Yeah.
Well, how did you get it up there? Well, we have rockets. What's a rocket?
Oh man,
right?
You would never.
There is no conversation.
Did you ever? Were you a Twilight Zone fan?
That is my favorite show ever, ever, ever.
So you remember the Buster Keaton episode where he goes forward in time to like the 50s and he just can't handle it? He's in the early 20th century and he's running from, and it's all in like silent movie style.
Okay.
And then I forgot.
That's a lost episode.
He comes across this scientist who has this time machine, and it zaps Buster Keaton into the present of the 60s.
Day.
Yeah. And the present of the day, and then there's sound, and the brilliance of it is that it very much in a sensory way shows what it probably was like to go from the period that he came from and then drop him into the inner city traffic and lights and electricity and all sorts of crazy shit.
So that's what I wonder. Drop us 50 or 100 years from now, would our heads explode?
Yeah.
Well, I think we are so accustomed to innovation at this point because of, you know, the last 50 years of what we've done.
Well, I mean,
I think we would expect.
No. You are making... You are overvaluing the meaning of the present. I have books that go way back, and I have... You ready?
Yes.
1900, an editorial in the Brooklyn Daily Eagle.
All right.
Okay? It is January 1st.
Hipsters.
1900. Okay, the Brooklyn book. Okay? And in it, it says, because we were riding high, we had...
Gentlemen, need to fill in beard patches?
We had dirigibles. With the internal combustion engine car had been invented. Railroads were crossing... That we had gliders, okay? And the editorial says, we can scarcely imagine that advances in transportation in the 20th century will rival those of the 19th. That is what you sound like right now. We are so accustomed to innovation. Well, how could we possibly be impressed?
But we are. Not only are we accustomed to it, we expect it. We expect to get a new device every
year. No, in 100 years, I said, can I borrow your head for a minute? Because I want to put it on his shoulders so that we can transfer some data.
Futurama.
Okay. You would freak out. Say, no, I'm not giving you my head. What are you doing? You're crazy.
Yeah,
no,
I'm not giving him my head.
I'm just saying. It's who is to predict what it is. And everyone thinks they live in special times. That's the perennial...
But we do, right, Neil?
Frailty of our capacity to imagine
all
a future.
I'm saying is we'll never get any smarter because I can't imagine it happening. Yeah, exactly. So.
Well, it's like, you know, you get there's people that go, it's like, you know, the way things are going in the world right now, it's about to end. We're at end times right now. But everyone's always said that.
And they're saying the kids of today, they'll never create the world that we made for them. And they've been saying that since. That's the famous quote. There's children no longer mind parents. Bribery and corruption abound. It is clear the end of the world is near. That was written on an Assyrian tablet 3000 BC.
Oh my gosh.
So you're not new in anything you're saying.
All you need to do is just go to Magic Kingdom, ride the carousel of progress. It takes you through the 20th century. All the advances in dishwashers.
There was a really good Whitest Kids You Know sketch where it's like these two
guys. I thought that was not the Magic Kingdom. That's in Epcot Center.
No, it's in Magic Kingdom. The carousel of progress is in Magic Kingdom next to, it's in Tomorrowland.
Tomorrowland in the Magic Kingdom. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But there was a good Wise Kids You Know sketch where it's like these two asshole guys get a time machine. They're like, let's fuck with somebody. So they go and get like a guy from the 1800s and then they just start taking him a little further. And they're like, and the guy's like, oh my God. They're like, ha, look at this idiot. He doesn't understand this stuff. And then they go way too far in the future and it's just like lights circling around them. The two guys are like, what the fuck? What the fuck? What the fuck?
Yeah, everything is just energy.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving through.
Yeah.
Well, that's why this idea of like searching for life on other planets, I always go, but you're searching for like some type of carbon-based life. Like, what if there's like a photon-based life that you're not aware of?
Well, so that's an important point. People said, you know, on the periodic table of elements, I know we're over time here,
I got to get this in.
Star Trek did this with the Horta. The question is, can you make life we're based on carbon. That's their central atom in all the molecules of our body, except the water molecule. So how about silicon? The reason why they're suggesting silicon is because silicon sits exactly below carbon on the periodic table. And if you are vertical in a column, you make the same molecules with other atoms because your electrons have the same structure in your outer shell. And so... you have CO2, you can have SiO2. Okay, you have CO, you can have SiO. All of these. I say maybe there's life based on silicon. Let's look for that. Why be constricted by life as we know it? Here's why. Here's why it's a damn good reason to look for life as we know it. Carbon is like the third or fourth most abundant ingredient in the universe. It's more, 5 times more abundant than silicon. And it makes more... They bond similarly together, but carbon is vastly more fertile. You can make more molecules with carbon than you can all other molecules combined. So if you're going to launch life, something called life, with the experimenting that was necessary in the primordial ooze that began it all, you want to start with an atom that gives you the maximum number of possibilities to explore. And upon doing so...
Keep going.
If you were to search the entire periodic table of elements for who that would be, it would be carbon. We are carbon-based life, not by a fluke, but because that is the most fertile foundation upon which you can make any kind of chemistry at all. And the most complex form of chemistry we know, we call life.
Right, that's all going to be on the test, you guys. Enjoy your weekend. Bring a number two pencil on Monday. We're doing Scantron.
Hey, don't forget to watch Cosmos on Sundays on Fox.
Cosmos on Sundays on Fox. Dr. Neil deGrasse Tyson, carbon sympathizer.
Carbon sympathizer.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, lover of knowledge. Delightful human being. One of my favorite people. Neil, I always love hanging out with you, and thank you so much for everything. Thank you for science. Thank you for Cosmos, and thank you for coming here again.
It's a pleasure. First time in your studios. So
yeah. Would you please tell everyone to enjoy their trillions and trillions of burritos?
Trillions and trillions
of burritos. Thanks, everyone.
We leave you now with Moody Blues.
Shut up, Square.
The Moody Blues knew how to write a long song. Just listen to Knights in White Satin. There's a whole like monologue in it.
There's a whole poem.
Yeah.
What they pass as a poem.
Yeah.
You know, breathe deep the gathering gloom. Watch light fade from every room.
Is this room actually stretching? Or is it your imagination?
There's those karaoke songs where it's just like, you know, can't do it from
top. It's up to 1,200 retweets.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
nice. How's the planetarium doing?
I got 38 on my picture of you. You've been giving as all been meant
for you. Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com. Use the offer code Nerdist3. That's Nerdist and the number 3.
I feel like I was blindsided.
Because it's a competition show.
From the producers of Jury Duty and The Bachelor.
We have scoured the earth for the 14 greatest reality contestants that were available during our production window.
Comes a reality competition show about reality competition shows.
Nobody has dared to find out who is the actual best at just being on a reality show.
I'm your host, comedian Daniel Tosh.
Is win or go home.
Each episode, our contestants will face new challenges that will test their strength and lack of life skills for a chance to win $200
million.
$200,000.
Prepare, because it's about to be ugly, crying, lots of fighting.
Tayshia, I have to defend myself.
Celebrating 25 years of reality TV with your favorites.
I have diarrhea. You cannot do this to me.
What in gay hell have I got myself into?
The GOAT, premiering on Freevee and Prime Video on May 9th.